Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Now you're welcome along to this evening's football show. It's always good to speak to our next guest, Philippe Auclair, who's on the line. Hi, Philippe.
Hello to you.
Great to have you with us. Where in the world are you at the moment?
Haha, it looks like I'm not in Donald Trump's bunker, whatever the colour behind me might make you think. I'm at home in London, in my office, talking to you, looking at the world, at this strange world, or trying not to look at it sometimes.
Yes.
But very happy to be in your company this afternoon, this evening.
We've been talking about the strange world on the show a good bit this evening.
I would imagine so, yes.
On a far less important footballing front, the reason we wanted to check in with you is that in the midst of Serie A and La Liga and the Premier League restarting, it would seem that there is discontent amongst the French clubs. They are now suddenly wondering, did they jump the gun? Who has been saying what?
Wow, it's quite extraordinary the amount of dissent and that there is at the moment. I mean, it's been like this from the beginning, and this actually explains why we are here now, is that Ligue 1 clubs haven't been able to speak with one voice from the very beginning, which literally forced the government's hand, end of April, there was this little sentence, just one single sentence from Edouard Philippe, the Prime Minister at the National Assembly, basically saying that season was over, which was said it was a bit ambiguous, and you would have thought that perhaps they had a little bit of wriggle room, both the French League and the French FA, but they acted very, very quickly, very decisively. In fact, it was only a matter of minutes before Noël Legret, who is the chairman of the French Federation, the French FA, said, that's it, the season is over, we stop the season now, and then it's only a question of deciding who is champion, who is relegated, and so forth. And there was already a lot of dissent, and quite a lot of people have changed their minds. For example, at one point, the one person that you're probably hearing the most about, Monsieur Jean-Michel Aulas, who is the chairman of Olympique Lyonnais, of course, at one point was in favor of stopping the season there and then, and has changed his mind completely to be now the unofficial head of the rebellion of people who want to convince both the French government and the French League and the French Federation to reconsider the decision and, if at all possible, to restart the league. So it's a complete mess, to be absolutely honest. It's not particularly edifying in terms of the behavior of the people concerned. It's been hugely divisive. And the only thing that has happened, I think, is to devalue even more the image that French football has of itself, which is really quite sad, very sad, to the point that many people are saying we shouldn't talk about the five major leagues anymore. We should talk about the four major leagues, and then France is somewhere down the line fighting it, out with the Portuguese and the Russians and so forth for a place in what do you call the UEFA Cup positions or Europa League positions. But the atmosphere is pretty nasty, to be absolutely honest. It's not very edifying. The media haven't covered themselves in glory either, taking a very aggressive and confrontational tone from the beginning. And actually, in my view, I'm just speaking as myself here, encouraging this kind of extremely divided and divisive pseudo-debate about whether it was right or not to end the league. And the thing is not to be able to move on, because, if it had been the case that, okay, the government takes the decision out of the hands of the French League and the French FA, and we just apply that, and then we carry on, and we are thinking already of the new season, which, by the way, I've just learned that is supposed to start on the 23rd of August for Ligue 1 and 22nd of August for Ligue 2. We could have concentrated on that, and not at all. Since then, it's all been about, anger, frustration, disharmony. Amiens, who are relegated, and I think understandably wanting to take their case to the High Court, challenging the decision to relegate them, which I think, again, own point of view, absolutely scandalous, what was done in that particular case. So this is where we are. It's one big mess. And one thing is sure, French football has lost a lot of money in this operation. And it's lost, I think, quite a lot of goodwill from a number of people within the country and without it.
Okay. Loads of interesting pieces in that. I hadn't realized it had become so acrimonious, I must say.
Oh,
I mean, those of us outside the country probably have more to be looking at, is the interesting thing, if we want to save France's blushes. The last I had checked in on all this was that the French Prime Minister had said there is no sport happening in this country until September, behind closed doors or otherwise. And so I was just under the impression that that was that. So, I mean, could, even if all the Ligue 1 clubs got together and decided, well, let's go back in July and finish the season, they still couldn't, I presume. That September ruling hasn't been reversed, or has it? Well, I presume it has if they're starting the new season on August 23rd.
Yes, I mean, but the new season behind closed doors. I mean, the modalities are not quite well. By the way, what I'm talking about, these dates are not official dates yet, not that I'm aware of. They are basically leaked dates, which is why I'm saying just literally in right now.
Did the French Prime Minister row back on the September deadline?
No, it's no, not really. But there have been quite ambiguous declarations by the sports minister, who seemed to indicate at one point that there was perhaps a little bit of wriggle room, and that maybe we could think again. Now, of course, the situation is so fluid, it would be really silly not to think, well, we can go back on what we said, because the situation evolves very quickly. You know, it can be that the situation gets much, much better than it was at the time. Let's not forget the decision was taken at the end of April. So we were in France past probably the peak of the pandemic, but we were still very much in it. And so there were a number of reasons why taking a decision there and then, especially with all the bickering going on, was perfectly reasonable thing to do. But now the situation is, of course, has improved an awful lot in France, as it has in Spain and Italy. And it might be that within 3-4 weeks, we're in a situation when we think, oh, actually, look at this. We don't have new cases, new infections. The number of deaths in hospitals and care homes and has dropped to nil, as it has in other European countries. As I said, you know, the situation is very fluid when it comes to, the health situation is very fluid and fortunately going in the right direction. And it might be that in 2 or 3 weeks' time, you know, opinions will have changed within the game and without the game as well at government level. But there's one thing to keep in mind when we look at all this, and something which has been put forward by a number of commentators in France. It shows yet again that club football in France is not really part of the culture. It's not such a big thing. For example, if you look at the reaction in Spain or in Italy when people were told, the La Liga will resume, the Serie A will resume, there was a genuine sense of wonderful, you know, this is important to us. It's absolutely part of our life in the summer and so forth. Life is not the same without a game on a Sunday or something like that. This is not the same in France at all. And I think from a government point of view, the sport is very important. We're still a very, you know, we're still a proper sports nation, but the most important event, the one that they have in mind, at the back of their mind, is not the French League, is the Tour de France. And I think all the efforts will be made in France. Every single sinew will be strained, believe me, to make sure the Tour de France happens in September. And whether that means that, because the cycling as well has got the great advantage that you can have cycling without crowds. You know, you know, when you think about the great attacks in the Alps and in the Pyrenees and in the Vosges, Planche des Belles Filles, usually there's a couple of guys, a couple of horses, and that's about it, and a few crows flying overhead. And then you've got people at the arrival, but that's not really where the theater happens. The theater happens on the road between the cyclists. So I think there's going to be, I would bet that you're going to have a Tour de France in September, and that you're going to have football behind closed doors in August, with perhaps the public coming back relatively soon. Now, there are some people who will say that with dates which already being put forward for the restart or the start of the 2020-2021 season in France, at least this as well is clear, and France will have a kind of advantage over others who will finish their season, say, on the 2nd of August, like the Premier League will. Premier League will have to wait. You cannot have just a 3 weeks, you know, delay between the end of one season and the start of the next. It's not going to happen. Mm. So the French League could actually have a almost normal season in 2020-2021, which I guess is also part of the thinking. But a lot of it has been, very, I wouldn't say befuddled. That would be not very kind for everybody. But it's been contradictory. It's been very divisive. It's really something that we should try and get over as quickly as we can.
I didn't realize that was the place of French football across French society. So, like French rugby, particularly in the south of the country, I know is a religion and
completely.
And then the Tour de France, I can imagine that the place it holds in the hearts of the people. So, where is football in the midst of all that then?
Football, the football culture is first and foremost a football culture of the national team, which is not very surprising. All the greatest moments of French football have come in the World Cup and the Euros and through the national team. Mm. Even, you know, before the Second World War, the French national team qualified for the quarterfinals of the World Cup. There was the extraordinary saga of the 1958 World Cup, semi-finalists, the Copas team. Then you carry on like that, and then you come obviously to the great Platini generation, then the Zidane Henri generation, and carrying on to now the Mbappe Pogba generation. So this is where I think people's if you talk about religion, this is where their faith is. It is in the national team, not the clubs. The clubs have got a local attraction. Some of them have got a supporters base which is national, such as Olympique de Marseille, of course, Saint-Etienne because of the European Cup, PSG because of what they've achieved over the last few years, and other clubs have got a great aura locally, like Lens, who are just going to come back to Ligue 1, or Strasbourg in the East, or Nantes in Brittany. But it is not a club culture. It's not a country of club culture. So therefore, club football is not as important to the French, to the majority of the French, as it is to people who follow the Bundesliga in Germany, the Serie A, Liga, Premier League, and so forth, or even the Primeira Liga in Portugal. You cannot compare it. It's a completely different kind of reality.
Okay, interesting. I hadn't realized that. Mm. To change tack then, you mentioned Paul Pogba. He is just one of the most talked about, analyzed footballers of his generation, without question.
Yeah.
Here is what I would call classic Paul Pogba, former English Premier League player analysis of Pogba. Coming your way, you can guess what he's going to say. Here's Teddy Sheringham with the latest exhibit.
They need to recruit in the right manner, get the right people out as well, which isn't easy when you're at a football club.
Teddy.
They need to be moving in the right direction.
Teddy, give us some names if you get rid of.
Well, the big one for me is Pogba. You know, he's I'm sure that's what you're asking about. There's been a lot of talk about him. When you mention top players, captains, when things weren't going right in our time, Roy Keane put things right. He would drive our team on. He would dig deep. He would make sure that we had a say in every game that we played in because of his desire. And I think when you look at Paul Pogba, does he have the same mentality? Yes, he might be a talented boy, but does he really dig deep? Does he get Manchester United out of the mire when the going gets tough? And for me, the answers are no. He gives off the wrong vibe as a Manchester United player. Yes, it's good to be cocky and arrogant at the right times. I would say Dwight York, I'd mentioned him earlier, he had that as well, big smile on his face and cocky and arrogant. But he had a desire to do things right as well. at the right times. And I think you've got to have that. And I don't think Paul Pogba gives you that. And I think he would be one that would need to go so that you can get someone else in with the right mentality and the right desire and the Manchester United way to drive your team on to make sure that you get out of the position that you're in and move the club forward.
I mean, that's the greatest hits list there, Philippe, all that stuff. Mentality, digging deep, giving out the wrong vibe. He's talented, yeah. And you know, there's an arrogance there, but yeah. He's no Roy Keane. So, Paul Pogba hasn't been...
Not many people are Roy Keane, by the way.
Well, that's, I mean, if Roy Keane was knocking around, I'm sure that, you know, he would be doing a hell of a job there. You know, it's like, on the one hand, many Manchester United fans listening will say, well, look, Pogba hasn't been a thorough success and you can't just take all the criticism and then over-defend him either. But there is no doubt he just draws a lot of focus and a lot of this kind of talk. You know, I think of the Pogba I saw in that behind-the-scenes French documentary on the World Cup win, and it was him in the dressing room banging the table yeah. and rallying the troops, and we're going to win this, and very much at the focal point. He wasn't sitting there kind of cocky doing keepy-uppies indifferent to the World Cup final. He was, you know, some not quite Roy Keane-esque, I'm sure, but he was of that mould in the dressing room, you know, that kind of a presence. So
very much so.
The Teddy Sheringham view there, talking to Graeme Souness, is, I would say, the typical English view of Pogba as a footballer. What's the French view of Pogba as a footballer?
I mean, the French view is very much determined by what Paul Pogba has done with the French national team. And I think there were many people before the 2018 World Cup who thought, you know, it's all about talk and it's about the attitude and it's about his haircuts and it's about the fashion and it's about his agent and he's moving from one club to the next. So I think the discourse was a little bit similar between what we have, you know, what I would say in England and what we had in France. Mm. But that was until that World Cup. I think the discourse has changed completely after that. He always had people who defended him, and we explained that, you know, he'd actually done very well when he was at Juve, which is absolutely true, that he couldn't be held responsible for the fact he was the most expensive player on the planet. He hadn't asked for it, which was true as well. So he had his detractors and also people who said, well, you know, you should realize you're talking about a very, very special talent. And he's a very, very special talent. And I think what changed the perception in France was the role he played, as you rightly insisted on, during the successful 2018 campaign. And the fact that he had the confidence and the trust of a man, Didier Deschamps, whom you would exactly think of as a kind of Roy Keane character.
Yeah.
I mean, Deschamps... Sorry, Roy, Deschamps is Keane plus the honours list, right? You know, you compare the two. If you're going to show me your medals kind of thing, Didier Deschamps is ahead of anybody else. It's extraordinary to say that. But and this having been a much lesser footballer than Roy Keane, by the way. Mm. But he's exactly that kind of, I'm the chief of the commando. This is how they talked about it, this kind of warlike discourse and language, which I hate myself, but that was their language. Mm. And Deschamps recognized in Paul Pogba one of the men who was going to bring the title to France, made him one of the bosses of that team. And Pogba was able to change his role on the pitch. You know, he was more than the guy who was in the dressing room and he was banging the tables and saying the right things. But on the pitch, look at his performances, how disciplined he was. Mm. In a team that was about discipline, a team that was not about, you know, fantasy like some other French teams had been in the past, it was very, you know, it was actually quite boring to watch.
Yeah.
I apologize for that. But Pogba was essential in this. And he showed what he could do. And I think the frustration, perhaps for Teddy Sheringham and Graeme Souness and others, is the fact that with Manchester United, you haven't seen this Paul Pogba yet, or you have seen flashes of what he can do. He has got a passing range which is almost unequalled, honestly. Yeah. He has the capacity to score goals. He can score headers. He can score left foot, right foot. Physically, is somebody who can certainly account for himself, even if sometimes his desire to do so is lacking, as everybody will agree. So it's the frustration. But this is why the view for us is different, because we think of the Pogba of the World Cup. And which makes people wonder what exactly is happening at Manchester United if you can't see that Paul Pogba there.
And if you remember his World Cup performances, which were incredibly disciplined, and I remember there were games where he was like a deep centre midfielder with no licence to get forward at times, and he seemed happy to fulfil that role. That was used as a stick to beat Mourinho with post-World Cup, if you remember. That was part of the Mourinho issue. You know, clearly, you know, you're alienating Martial, you're alienating Pogba, look how he played for Deschamps. And then when Mourinho went for the first however many weeks under Solskjaer, Pogba was immense. You saw what he could be. It was the World Cup discipline plus the flair and the goals and the dynamism and getting into the box and scoring goals. And after that initial flourish under Solskjaer, Solskjaer got the job full time, it has dissipated. And then there's been the injury, and then it's been a prolonged injury. And we're back now to a really interesting point in Pogba's career. And the question is, will he take this time and will he examine himself? Because he seems like a smart person anytime I see
he's
him interviewed.
Yeah, but
yeah, it really
very
does.
Smart, yes.
Impressive.
Absolutely.
Will he examine all the things, you know, the which are said about his game? Will Solskjaer get through to him? Even Wayne Rooney the other week in the Sunday Times was saying something that Graeme Souness often says of Pogba, which is, could you imagine if Pogba, in a Frank Lampard-esque way, made runs into the box continually? He would be unstoppable. You just wouldn't be able to keep up with him, and he can finish like nobody's business. He could be unplayable at times, and I agree totally on his passing range. And I look, you look at Pogba, and he's getting to an age now where you just wonder. No. You just wonder.
It's now, isn't it? Yeah. It is now. And it's that's the thing. I mean, all through last season, because we were talking about Pogba, but we were not talking about him because there's this weird dissociation between the player and the person we talk about. Yeah. Or the thing we talk about is that he hasn't played for a very long time. We don't know in which state he's going to be when he finally steps on the field of play again. But in some ways, it didn't seem to matter that much that Paul Pogba was not playing. Did you see what I mean? It was very strange, because I was thinking, I was looking, look at the birth certificate. He should be at his absolute apex right now.
Yeah, he's 27.
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of seasons, most of his career will be behind him. Actually, most of his career is already behind him.
And wasn't it interesting that Sheringham, and it was Freudian in that he described Pogba as either I think it was a talented young boy, he said. As if, you know, Pogba still behaves as a 23-year-old full of talent. Now, Roy Keane at 27 was embarking on the treble-winning season.
Correct. But there is a tendency with some players, like I still hear people talk about Jesse Lingard as a young player, which is very funny, or not.
Pogba's good friend, Jesse Lingard. You know, maybe that's the worry.
But I think it's more to do with the fact that because Serie A was invisible when he was there, don't forget that. And he was wonderful at Juve. And in a way, these years have been taken away from his career.
Yeah.
But this is where he actually made his reputation. That was not at Manchester United.
What's said about that, Philippe, that's really interesting, because I missed his Serie A week in, week out performances. But I guarantee you, without even looking at the text machine, five people will text you and say, yes, but Pirlo ran the show and Pogba was a nice luxury on top of that.
Well,
I don't know to what extent that's true or not.
Well, it's not an individual game. The reason why Pogba was so good with the French at the World Cup was also when you have people like N'Golo Kanté or even Blaise Matuidi alongside you, and then you can play to Griezmann and Mbappe and even Olivier Giroud, the first defender. If you can play with people like that, you know, you're going to look better, strangely enough. So the argument is neither here nor there. The question is more, I mean, for me, when I look at this Manchester United side and I see the way that the impact that Bruno Fernandes has had in this side, I personally cannot wait, well, first of all, to go back to the stadium as a fan, but I cannot wait to see how Pogba and Fernandes can work together. I mean, it's to me seems so obvious that there's something very special which could happen between those two players. I mean, because Fernandes is definitely the kind of player who will, I mean, certainly trigger something in Pogba, because Fernandes has got this what's the word? Asperity about him. You know, he's a competitor. He's a born competitor. and you would love to see what's going to happen. So this was, I mean, again, personal view, the worst possible time for Manchester United to even think about parting with Paul Pogba if they could find somebody to buy him at the price that he probably commands still in the market that we're going to be in a month's time.
Yes, he would depart as a failure in the eyes of most.
He would depart as a failure in the eyes of everybody if he were to depart like this. There's unfinished business. What has he done? He's won a couple of titles, and he's had a few good games, but he's been nowhere near the Paul Pogba we were expecting. But again, you know, that's where I've got to temper what I'm saying, because he's also a victim of his own propaganda, and the propaganda that he's quite willing others to carry on for him. You know, when you do, there are certain things that you do, and you have to expect to be judged on that as well. And yes, there is an aspect of him which is Pogba, the merchandising project, definitely, which, by the way, is also Manchester United's merchandising project. He was very much part of it. So we shouldn't separate him from the commercial efforts of the club. And heaven knows they've been very, very big on commerce and merchandising. If it were to stop now, it would, yes, be, you would look back at it thinking, all those wasted years, really. Even with the few peaks that you mentioned, you know, you would think, well, with this potential, which he achieved it on the international scene with his national team. He didn't do it with his club. That would be tremendously sad, which is why I don't think there's a chance in hell that he will leave Manchester United. He will stay.
Okay.
And I think for the greater good of Manchester United, he will stay.
Okay. Philippe, as ever, a real pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Now, you're welcome, Mac. That was Philippe Auclair before the ad break. We have Daniel McDonald from the Irish Independent with us now. Hiya, Dan.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Very well. Long time no talk.
Oh, it's been a while, Joe. Although I've heard you talk. You know, I've heard you talk on a regular basis, fumbling through your Mount Rushmore and whatnot. But I said I wouldn't bring that up again, actually. You get very sensitive when anyone does. But anyway.
Did you use the word fumbling? Striding?
I did use the word fumbling.
Striding.
Dropping. Generally, any kind of error-related words you can use.
I muscled my way through Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
So, we haven't talked in some time. I think you were taking a few days off and we've missed each other, like ships in the night, Dan. But talk to us about the League of Ireland situation. People will be keeping a vague eye on this. My most recent understanding of the general situation is that of all the summer leagues across Europe, we are pretty much approaching last place. But I also understand that one of the big issues around this is that the League of Ireland, more so than most, is very reliant on gate receipts and bums on seats, i.e. there is no TV money. So that is complicating the situation massively. So talk to me. Where are we?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember when I spoke to you last, but unfortunately it hasn't changed that much since then. And that would be a concern for a lot of people in some ways, just in the sense that at one point it did look like we were getting close to a decision maybe on what might happen. But in some respects, UEFA were meant to have a big meeting towards the end of May, which has been pushed back to June the 17th. And that's probably given the League of Ireland a bit more time and the FAI a bit more time. Put simply, Joe, to try and somehow come up with the financial certainty that convinces all the clubs that it's worth coming back. Now, the one development that has happened, and it's maybe tied in with the broader picture of how things might change, is that we did see last week the start of this pilot program, this COVID testing scheme for the four clubs who are due to play in Europe. Again, there's an assumption there that European football goes ahead this summer. But funnily enough, you know, with the health situation, I wonder, are we more confident about things now than we were 2 or 3 weeks ago? That's potentially a debating point. But anyway, we had the four European clubs who did become the first players from team sports in Ireland. So the players of Bowes, Dundalk, Derry and Shamrock Rovers, so the first team sports in Ireland to undergo COVID testing. They did so last Monday and everyone got the all clear. All four playing staffs and support staff and management staff, whatever, all got the all clear. So they're doing their second test this week. In fact, they've done it already and they'll be waiting on the result of it. And the hope is that showing that these four teams are in good health, that they are well, in tandem with, I suppose, the tentative hopes that we're making good progress generally in society in terms of community transmission, may fuel the belief that actually, you know, contact sport and team sport, initially involving elite clubs, won't be a cause for concern in July, late July, the start of August. But that doesn't deal with the league as a whole and whether it comes back into an organised structure of games. But there is, I suppose, some light at the end of the tunnel. And I guess the one thing is that you do have to look at the broader health picture again in society and wonder that phase five of the roadmap did talk about restricted attendances in stadiums from August. And you just wonder, other leagues in Europe are trialing it with 15, 20, 25% of capacity. And you just wonder, will the debate start to go that way if our health picture improves? But, I mean, they have to get the finances right in the first place, and that remains a considerable challenge. And that hasn't really changed to give clubs the confidence that they can afford to come back.
Okay. So let's say for a second attendances aren't viable. They're not viable, just for a moment.
Mm.
Which seems very possible and something that the League of Ireland will have to plan for. As it stands on its own two feet, the league wouldn't be viable given the lack of TV money and the lack of revenue. So who is the most likely to pick up the tab, and how big is that tab? Like, what are we talking about here? Does 10 million get a League of Ireland season done? Is it 20 million? Do we have any idea?
Well, okay, so the wage bill for professional players in the league would be something in the region of €600,000 per month. Now, that's not the only running costs, of course. You know, there's travel and insurance and whatever, you know, just general, you know, running costs that you have to deal with.
Well, let's round that up to €1 million a month.
Okay, let's say €1 million a month. And, okay, but at the moment, the wage subsidy that the government are providing is covering around 2/3 of the wage bill.
Okay.
And that is like a considerable expense that's covered. And anything that happens here, Joe, anything that happens is reliant on that wage subsidy remaining in place, or some guarantee with government being thrashed out that that subsidy remains in place. Mm-hmm. So that you're talking about clubs effectively being able, they're trying to find the funds to cover around 15 to 20%, 25% of their wage bill thereabouts. If you talk about cuts and other things being factored in, plus the cost of actually just running a club and running training. And there's an argument, this is sort of a long-winded point, but there's the extra costs as well of testing and that side of things coming into the equation, which the FEI are saying they're going to cover. So you're talking about clubs paying a portion of their wage bill and just their general running costs, like, you know, other staff and training and whatever you need to do. So you're talking about a substantial amount of money. Now, what happened was, just to explain before you come back to me, maybe another sum, that the FEI went to the clubs recently and they didn't present a firm package on the table, but they spoke about a provisional compensation package of around €1.1 million, which you do the sums on that, and it comes not a perfect science because there might be different needs in the first division relative to the Premier, but let's just say the sums were around 50 grand or 55 grand or so per club. And clubs would argue that the cost of coming back would be far larger than that compensation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the they're trying to close, minimize the gap so that a club knows, okay, if football returns, we have to try and generate this amount of money through fundraising and sponsorship, and it's maybe streaming views, but there's no certainties with that in a COVID world where you can't go door to door and fundraise like you normally might, for example.
Yeah. Okay, so clubs may well have to decide if to what extent they're keen to run at a loss for this season, just for the sheer importance of finishing the season.
Yeah, I completely respect the club's points on that. But the problem, in fact, there was a very good debate here recently that Nathan had Vinnie Perth from Dundalk on and David Rowe as Sligo Rovers treasurer. And it gave both sides of the view of the importance of maintaining a professional industry for the players working within it,
yeah.
You know, the full-time players who their livelihoods rely on it, versus the needs of clubs in some cases where it's volunteers trying to keep clubs afloat. The one thing we can't avoid is that the players have contracts in every scenario. And if the season ends, it doesn't mean that those players' contracts aren't honoured. an agreement would have to be reached on those contracts. And I think it's clear from comments that have been made from the players' union that the players aren't just going to go, well, the season's over, that's it. They will have all made commitments in their life based on their, whatever it might be, you know, mortgage and other commitments based on earning this amount of money. And they will need to reach some kind of settlement on it. And while the COVID unemployment payment is there at the moment, obviously we will have to see, you know, how things exist across a long period of time. And I guess to summarize it, I think like clubs are probably going to face some kind of pain in every scenario. In the one where the season ends, they thrash out and negotiate what that pain is. Where there's one where the football comes back, there's an element of gamble of, well, it could be this, but can we make it better than this? And this is where, for example, I think now the possibility of opening grounds later in the year for small numbers of spectators, could that be used to facilitate a compromise and say, well, actually, guys, in September you might, but again, that's a gamble, and it's a delicate equation, and I respect all points of view on it are coming from very different positions in some cases.
And based on soundings and conversations that you might be having with various stakeholders, what is the sense of money from UEFA or money from FIFA or money from the government to get this thing over the line and make it plausible and possible?
Yeah, okay. Well, I think with the government side of things, there's already been a rescue deal this year for Irish football, which led to increased state funding. And we might speak about some other stuff going on with that briefly, you know, in a minute.
Sure.
But it's clear that in every scenario for Irish football here going forward for the rest of the year, they're going to need some form of state support. And that's no different to Irish rugby. We're speaking about that. GAA have been speaking about that, because it's not just the League of Ireland. It's the fact that there may be no international games with fans this year, which is a massive chunk of the budget. So in the League of Ireland picture, I think, you know, that's going to be part of the equation of state support. And I think the COVID testing pilot program for all sports, they can maybe get some government support for that. That's one thing. FIFA is a big is significant. UEFA, sorry to clarify, UEFA did have a rescue package available for all European nations to help them with COVID relief, but the FAI couldn't avail of that because they've already used their advance funds from UEFA to deal with the other crisis that we had in the last year. So that could have solved all of our problems with this, actually. But this is the consequences of previous actions, and that's left us exposed. So the third one is FIFA. And FIFA have been speaking in broad terms about being able to provide supports and how this is the time for them to step up. But they haven't provided certainty about when that may be. I know that the FAI have written to them to say, well, we're in a bad way here. I think the World Players Union, FIFPro, have lobbied them and said, well, there are leagues around the you know, Europe where players are potentially going to lose money because of this. And there is a belief that FIFA will come forward with something, but there's a question of whether they'll come forward with it quickly enough for people to make the commitment. Again, you know, it's like making a commitment on the basis that someone might pay you back a debt in a while, you know, and that's they need more certainties than that. So there is still the equation.
A distinct possibility that the league season may just have to be cancelled.
That remains a distinct possibility. I think there's an eagerness to avoid it. And my personal opinion on this is that would be an absolute embarrassment if that happened. If, touch wood and all, the health situation appears to be improving as it is, and I know we have to be cautious, very cautious, and I'd be in the cautious camp about a lot of the easing of restrictions. I wouldn't be cavalier about it. But however, it does appear that things are getting slightly better. And, you know, as you mentioned to me a minute ago, like all the other summer leagues in Europe are back. So if the League of Ireland doesn't return, it's not really just because of the pandemic. You know, it obviously that's where it stems from, but it would be more a case of our problems. Like all the winter leagues that are finishing, you know, they're all planning to come back in September, you know, like September, October.
As you pointed out in your piece in the Irish Independent, if you go through the summer leagues, for instance, Sweden, takes in 20 million on TV money alone. I think that might be second bottom of the list or pretty much close to it. So, I mean, if someone was to turn around and muster up 20 million and hand it over to the clubs, we'd have ourselves a season. It's because there's just no revenue from TV. That we started the conversation with that context and we tease out all the possibilities, all the issues. We're still shy of the 20 million, for instance.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, because obviously when we have a discussion about, say, the League of Ireland in the context of team sports in Ireland, say, you know, rugby and GAA, I mean, there's no disputing that the other sports are more popular. They draw bigger attendances. It's a, you know, it's a fact that we look at. But however, in saying that, you know, the level of consistent support provided to clubs is still actually very good at a certain level. And as a result, clubs rely on that. Mm. Like the 28% of income in Ireland to clubs comes from gate revenue, 28%. In some of the other summer leagues, it's 1%.
Yeah.
You know, so that, like, that is the reality. And so there are valid reasons. And in fact, you know, that 28% figure is an average. And that doesn't take into fact that some of the European clubs, Dundalk, for example, Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk in particular, like they would earn much more from, say, European money. So for other clubs, actually, the percentage of gate income could be way more than that. And in fact, it's not just the 28%. I think there's another 40% or so from commercial activity, which mostly relates to match days. So, like, without the stadiums being open, it's a problem. But in saying that, you would hope that the wage subsidy covering a portion of the wages can cancel out that to some degree, and that they can get around the table, because putting all of our players, like putting all of our footballers on the dole or laying them off or whatever, it's like it would cause major problems for football in this country.
No, it'd be dreadful. It'd be dreadful. Two last quick points. I'll finish on the state funding you wanted to mention. But before that, is there any great pressing deadline here? Like, can we cool our jets and see how things are looking in a month and let the League of Ireland season drift into a month or two or three over? Is that very viable?
It appears that June 17th, though, is probably going to be a pressure point, and maybe even that week, purely because UEFA that week are going to...
They want to know.
They're going to identify... Also, they want to know, and they're also going to identify their schedule for the rest of the year in terms of, you know, European qualifiers and stuff like that. And realistically, we need to know. Our clubs and players need to know. Because obviously the other clubs that aren't... There's clubs at the moment who are train or are about to start training, but that's the European clubs. The other players don't know where they're at. And they want to know, hang on, do I need to actually go and seek work elsewhere for the rest of the year or not? So you can't keep them hanging on forever.
It's incredibly serious and stark for them. Before we go, you wanted to make a point about state funding. You have about 90 seconds, 2 minutes here.
Well, it was this story of the letter that was obviously sent by Nixon Morton, who was a...
FAI member Nixon Morton expresses concerns to UEFA and FIFA. He is arguing that the FAI has lost its sovereignty.
Yeah, it's a very strongly worded letter, and maybe we'll come back to it again another day in more detail, because do you know what? I think it's inevitable that we will. Okay. Because there's a bit of a thing brewing beneath the, you know, not too far below the surface here in terms of unhappiness with some of the more old guard of the football family, with terms and conditions that were imposed as a consequence of the state deal in January that kept Irish football, which have gone further than reforms that they voted for last year. It was a sense of like turkeys voting for Christmas last year to some degree, but it wasn't as widespread as the reforms that were updated in January, which now tip the balance towards independent directors on the board and you know, people who've been on council for 10 years. Rather than staying for 3 more years, they have to go immediately now. And members of the FAI football family, again, have complained to FIFA and UEFA about this arising from a government deal, and this represents undue influence from outside forces. So this is something we will return to again, because I think there's tensions out there that are going to have to be teased out in the coming weeks and months. We're heading back towards some FAI tensions again, Joe, just in case people wanted to feel a bit of normality back in their lives. They might get it from that.
Well, this is just what the situation needs.
This is just what we want, yeah.
Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent. We'll talk about that next time we're chatting, Dan. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Joe.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.